blessing. We talked about the family church with Roberta coming along and says it's a real blessing whenever people can get involved and to read and to pray from the front. Obviously, some people find it easier than others, but it is always, always a blessing to have people from the church come and participate in some way. And the genuineness, I've been told, my wife tells me, an emotional man's an attractive man. Oh. So that's what she comforts me as every time I get emotional as well from the front. But thank you, Colin. Really, I genuinely mean that. I appreciate whenever people, it's very easy to say no, but I do appreciate you being involved there, and hopefully we'll be blessed. I'm going to try and remember what I've got in the PowerPoint, but we'll do our best. This basically is two parts to this passage, okay? We've got the first part where we've got the request of James and John, okay? Very prideful, very boastful, not very humble of them in order to say, oh, can one of us sit at your left and one of us sit at your right, one of us sit right, one of us sit at your left. And then separate to that, we've got this blind man, Bartimaeus, who receives a miracle and receives his sight. So we've got two different things when I first read it, two separate accounts, but I'm going to try and join them together in order to see that there is a common theme among them. And I've entitled this Missing the Point, that we had a group of people from the start, John and James, who missed the point, and then we've got someone who's got the point, and how we can be very much like James and John about missing the point, okay? So we'll look at it at the start, the request of James and John. Now, with regards to who actually made the request, we've got it here in Mark's account that James and John, the son of Zebedee, came to him. In a few other accounts, such as in Matthew, James and John's mother was involved. And whether she made the request actually to Jesus, whether she was there, whether she just lined her boys up to say, go on, off you go, and make sure you go and ask him. This is obviously maybe a mother wanting the best for her sons. And I want to ensure that whenever the positions are being dealt, are handed out, that at least my two sons, James and John, are going to get positions of very senior positions. So the mother wanting the best for her boys. But whether she was there or not, or just pushing them forward, we do know that James and John's were related to Jesus. We know that through the fact that it said that they were sons of Zebedee. And if you go back, they were actually therefore cousins of Jesus. That in fact, James and John's mother was the sister of Jesus's mother, Mary. And there's an account that where they're together during Jesus's death and burial where the two sisters were together. So I think maybe at this point that they thought they had some sort of leverage or some sort of, you know, right in order to go and ask Jesus for some position, because after all, their family, and after all, it's all about who you know, not what you know. I have never, ever been faced with that as much as when I moved to Northern Ireland. It's all about connections. And you hear it all the time in conversations. You'll soon hear people, oh, well, I know so-and-so, and I know so-and-so, and I know them. And it's all about, oh, well, I can get things done because I know certain positions. And I was going to give you an example, but I won't, because we're back to recording the messages and I can't. But let's just say even my industry is all about who you know rather than what you know. And here, though, that's the way of the world works, isn't it? It's all about who you know. But here we've got a county culture way of doing things. It's a complete upside down. This passage reinforces how different the gospel is to the way that the world works in. And in fact, Jesus has tried time and time again to present to the disciples, to present to us how different it is. They've already, you know, had an argument. Who's the greatest? Listen, in chapter 9, and anyone who wants to be first must be last and the servant of all. They don't get it at all. He's gone through time and time again explaining about how he, as the Son of God, is going to die and how he's going to be treated. I mean, in verse 31 there, even before he goes on about the predicting of his death in chapter 10, many who are first will be last and the last will be first. And he's tried to talk about, even he is the high ranking, as I said, how he will be treated and how he is going to serve. How he's going to be mocked and spat upon and flogged, and how he's going to be killed. And that's just not the way that the world works, is it? This is the Son of God. This is the Messiah. You don't get treated that way. And that's why they're struggling to take this in. They can't compute what Jesus is actually saying to them. They can't get their heads around it, because it's not how the world works, and it's not how important people are treated. And that's why we've got this stupid request by James and John. Directly after Jesus explaining, listen, laying out how he's going to die in order for other people, you've got James and John coming to him directly and saying, oh, by the way, they somehow think this is a good time to ask for a position of high standing, of hierarchy. I mean, you talk about missing the point. They couldn't compute it at all. They've just missed how Jesus was laying out how they should live and how what he was going to do. And whenever I read this and read this again and read this again, and all the commentators that I read were all about James and John, how foolish they were, I couldn't help but see myself in James and John. I couldn't help think about churches and to realize how much that we miss the point, just like James and John missed the point. Because, as I said, James and John have heard a number of times there, the first will be last and the last will be first. They've heard, this is the third time they've heard about how Jesus, the Son of God, is going to be beaten, killed in order for them. And how many times have we heard that message? How many times have you heard that you also are to be meek and mild and humble? How many times have you heard with regards to it's about a life of serving? How many times have you listened to the verse 44 that was there? Whoever wants to be first must be a slave of all. And what difference has it made to your life? We can miss the point. Yeah, God, I know that I'm supposed to lay down my life. I've heard that I'm supposed to pick up my cross. But there's just so many things that I need to get sorted out in my life first. They've repeatedly heard how Jesus is going to die for them, about what he's going to do, how they are to live their life. And the first things that James and John do here, whenever they are in response to this, we want you to do for us whatever we ask. How's your prayer life? Because this is where I had to analyze my life, my prayer life. What is my prayer life full of? What is your prayer life full of? Are requests? Does it revolve around me, the way that I think should be happen? Or is it how I should, his kingdom come, his will be done? I hear what you're saying, Jesus. I understand what you're saying, but I'm going to trust that you're going to listen to my requests, because if you were a God, you'd want me to have my wants and wishes here. Because, listen, the way I think with like James and John here is that you have to understand that they are theologically sound. They understand who they're talking to here. I mean, they've gone to Jesus here to ask for positions in glory. So they understand that he is going to die. Academically, they understand he's going to die and he's going to rise again. They understand that he is the Son of God. So they've gone to the right person in order to say, oh, listen, can one of us sit at your right and one of us sit at the left? They know that he is the Son of God. And somehow they've worked it out that they deserve to sit at his right, at his left, knowing about who he is. Somehow they think it's fitting for them to receive the things that they're asking for. And we can live our lives like that. I understand that I was a sinner even before Jesus died for me. I understand that I am nothing and that he has saved me and brought me into the world. But I don't deserve what I'm going through right now. I deserve this promotion. I deserve these things. I don't deserve the pain and suffering that I'm going through. Surely I deserve more, and I'm going to ask God for more. Well, it's exactly like James and John. They thought they deserved more. So I kind of wrote down that there was two different camps here. You've got James and John's behavior to Jesus, where it revolved around them, okay? Their Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, some of Sunday, let's say, revolved around them. And then you've got Jesus, who says this, who being in very nature God, did not consider the equality of God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking on the very nature of a servant. Which one do you lean towards? Think about your week. Think about every day. Think about the year that's gone by. Is your life more revolved around yourself? Have you made yourself nothing by taking on the very nature of a servant, following the leadership and the example of Jesus Christ? Are you closer to James and John's position or to Jesus? Whenever Jesus asked them, what do you want me to do? What do you want from me? And they asked, of course, one to sit at his right and one to sit at his left. Jesus explains to them, listen, you don't really understand what you're asking for right now, do you? Okay, this is where your intellectual, your understanding, it lets you down here. Because for you to receive such positions of glory, do you understand what it's going to actually cost you? For you to receive the positions of glory, do you understand the amount that you're going to have to actually serve and suffer in order for the things that you are asking? As I said, Jesus has continually been talking about the suffering that he's going to go through. And here he refers to it in verse 38 as a cup. Can you drink the cup I drink or be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with? This cup is a cup of suffering, the wrath of God that he's going to have to encounter. Do you really understand? And he's asking James and John here, for you to ask for such a thing, you don't really understand the amount that you're going to have to suffer for. And it's an important question. I stopped here for a little bit because it is a fact that suffering, sacrifice, serving is part of our Christian life. And I couldn't help but flip right back to some of the past sermons that we've had there over the last number of months as we've been working through Mark. I was thinking of the parable of the sower. Because I wonder how much we're prepared to suffer, to sacrifice, and to serve. The parable of the sower, of course, says that the word of God, the gospel was thrown out as like a seed. But for some people, it was landed on rocky ground. It never took hold. For others, it did. The seed went into it, but it was kind of swamped and choked out by thorns because it never took root. I was thinking of a dear friend of mine this week then, and we were at a conference. It was a great conference. It was a great speaker. And I remember afterwards, there was a big call in order for people to come down to the front in order who wanted to give their life to Jesus. And I remember him with great boldness, he put his foot up in the chair in front of him to tie a shoelace. I remember it distinctly because he hit the guy in front in the head and he wasn't happy and he was tying up a shoelace. But he was so energized with regards to wanting to follow Jesus. He says, yeah, I understand. And they talked a bit about suffering there during this conference, during what it would cost. And he said, yes, I'm up for this. And he walked down the front and he prayed a prayer and he came back and it was great. It was a great evening. See my friend. But then as life went on there and as weeks went on, some of the leaders spoke to him about, you know, his dating and his sexual relationship with his non-Christian girlfriend. And this is a relationship that he wasn't prepared in order to give up. He wasn't happy with the things it was going to cost him. He wasn't happy of how he was being asked to live his life because he pursued and wanted other things. And eventually he disappeared. He was nowhere to be seen. And I think it was very clear at that moment that he didn't understand about what it was going to cost him. He didn't understand what it meant to be all in for Jesus. And I think it's an important question for all of us to ask at this point. As we think about James and John, did they understand what they were asking for? Can you drink the cup that I drink or be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with? And the answer in verse 39, we can. And this is where the commentators were saying they were foolish, they were arrogant, they didn't understand. And I think they didn't understand. But I started to change my thinking. And this is where I get a bit nervous. When you drift away from some of the things you read, you get nervous, okay? But I started to change my thinking of James and John here. Because yes, while we could dismiss them and saying that they didn't understand and they completely missed the point of what they were saying about how they could answer it, that we can. If they didn't understand it then, they were going to understand very soon afterwards. And they did, they followed through. They were disciples. They were Christians. They were followers of Jesus. They were in good soil. In verse 39, as I said, they answered, we can. And Jesus, though, went on and he didn't rebuke them for their answer. Jesus said to them, you will drink the cup I drink and be baptized with the baptism I'm baptized with. If they understood what that meant, they should have been shaken and worried about what that meant. Yeah, you will suffer and take the drink that I'm suffering from. He goes on to explain, obviously, in the verses following that, that it was a stupid request that they obviously asked, because ultimately, whenever they asked to sit at the right and to sit at the left, they said, listen, you're going to have to submit to the Father's will for this. He's prepared everything. This isn't for you and I to worry about. It's not for them to worry about. All they have to do is to stop caring about those things and start taking care of following and serving. That's what they need to concentrate on. Everything else is being taken care of. But at this point, what I'm trying to highlight is that Jesus has confirmed that they will suffer, that they will drink from this cup. So whatever they understood at that time, we have learned that they were able to bear fruit. And they meant what they said. The proof was in the pudding. In fact, James was the very first disciple to be killed. His head was cut off. Because of the gospel. King Herod loved the popularity that he got from killing James with the sword, that actually he went on a pursuit in order to arrest other disciples. John also suffered great persecution and was completely isolated on an island where he died. Why is that? The Bible tells us because he gave testimony to Jesus Christ. He suffered for the gospel. He suffered for Jesus. So I want us to stop, as I stopped, you know, when I was preparing this, and think about, hang on a minute, what is Jesus saying to these disciples? What is he saying to us? Because no matter what you think about James and John at this point, and how wrong they were for even asking such a stupid worldly question, how they didn't understand what it was to be humble and in order to serve, the fact is they followed Jesus till the very end. The fact is they died for what they believed in, for following Jesus. They proved that they were in good soil. And I ask the question, what soil are you in today? There was evidence that came from James and John's life. And therefore we need to look at the evidence about what is in my life and what is in your life. What evidence is there that the words that you said, maybe for some of you many years ago, some of you quite recently, whenever you asked Jesus into your life, whenever you prayed for forgiveness, you recognized who he was, that you need a savior. What has happened from that moment onwards? If we went on just these words from James and John, you could just dismiss them. So they didn't mean what they went. They didn't understand. But we can read on and say they did. They received it. They were in good soil. They were full of the Spirit. They lived the life that they were called to. With all the mistakes, by the way, they were screw-ups. They got so many things wrong. But they believed in Jesus Christ and they were able to serve, and they ultimately served with their life. So from the moment that you and I said the same words with as little understanding as we had back then, what evidence is there in our life of us continuing to follow, continuing to serve in such a way that we've been called to live our lives? Does it reflect verse 44? Whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. Does it reflect that camp? Or does it reflect that camp that James and John were in whenever they asked, full of their own importance, full of their own ambition, full of their own requests? So if Jesus said to you, which I believe he is, because this is written down for an account, and he says to you, are you able to drink the cup that I drink from? What would your answer be, knowing the cost? James and John knew what the outcome was going to be. What would your answer be? Are you able to drink the cup that I drink from? And James and John, they didn't have to worry about the future glory, though. They didn't have to worry about all of those things were taken care of whenever they followed Jesus. I actually read this morning, I turned to John 14 about how there are rooms being prepared for those who are Christians, those who follow Jesus. And verse 14, I think it's in verse 2. Well, let me read it from. Do not let your hearts be troubled. You believe in God. Believe also in me. My Father's house has many rooms. If that were not so, would I have told you that I am going there to prepare a place for you? And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, that you also may be where I am. You know the way to the place where I am going. Thomas said to him, Lord, we don't know where you are going. So how can we know the way? And Jesus answered, I am the way, the truth, and the life. Another verse I want to finish on here is in 2 Corinthians here, with regards to how we're asked to live a life in reflection of suffering and serving. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. Since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. James and John were to trust God to take care of everything that is to come. They can just rest on those things. But they also needed to trust him for the present, to live out this life of serving the way that Jesus has served. And let me try and tie this through here now. If we move on to the next passage, okay, about Bartimaeus receives his sight. Let me just read it again, if you don't mind, just so it's fresh to us. Then they came to Jericho as Jesus and his disciples, together with a large crowd, were leaving the city. A blind man, Bartimaeus, which means son of Timaeus, was sitting by the roadside begging. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout, Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me. Many rebuked him and told him to be quiet, but he shouted all the more, Son of David, have mercy on me. Jesus stopped and said, call him. So they called to the blind man, cheer up, on your feet, he's calling you. Throwing his cloak aside, he jumped to his feet and came to Jesus. What do you want me to do for you? Jesus asked him. The blind man said, Rabbi, I want to see. Go, said Jesus, your faith has healed you. Immediately, he received his sight and followed Jesus along the road. Now, there is a direct link between those quite a number of miracles where people gain their sight with the blindness and the darkness of the physical sight when they were giving it and they could step into light and see, of the spiritual blindness and darkness were people in, and then they received spiritual light. Okay, so the physical blindness represents spiritual blindness. In fact, you can see this. I don't know whether I've written it up here. In John 9, it says this, for judgment I come into this world, that those who do not see may see, and those who see may become blind. And that means those people who recognize that they are blind, those people that are humble, that understand that they are spiritually in darkness, will receive spiritual lightness. So those people who are blind will see. And then you have those people that go around the world and say, I know everything, I see everything, I'm a success, that they are going to actually become blind. And the point I want to make here, and it's a very straightforward, very simple point, is this. Bartimaeus knew what he needed. Taking into reflection that the spiritual sight that he gained was him receiving spiritual light, he knew what he needed. So Jesus asked James and John the very same question that he asked Bartimaeus. What do you want from me? And their request was full of blindness. It was a position of honor for themselves. It was about them. He asked the very same question to this blind person, what do you want me to do for you, in verse 51. And in unquestionable faith in Jesus, he asked Jesus to be brought into the light, which then resulted in him following Jesus. There was one, the request was all about himself. There was one that enabled him to follow Jesus. And if Jesus now asks you, what do you want from me? What is your request? What would you be asking for? Again, I go back to our prayer lives as an example of what it is. Whenever Jesus was explaining to the disciples, continuously throughout Mark, about his death, and here just before this, and James and John, he said it about the third time. It is actually documented in Luke that they didn't understand, they didn't grasp what was being said to them. And that wasn't because they were uneducated. Remember, we've already said that they theologically sound here. It wasn't because they were unintelligent of in some way, but it was because they were still heavily influenced by the way the world works. They were so influenced that this doesn't compute into their mind of what Jesus is saying. And the reason they didn't grasp it was because the world they lived in and the influences around them. What can stop you and I from understanding what we read week in, week out is because of the worldly influences that we're in. The world that they were in is the same world that we're in. We were talking about history suddenly yesterday, and the same warfare and corruption and everything that went on for centuries and centuries is the same motivation of why it still happens today. The human heart has not changed, and the world we live in hasn't changed. So if we think and recognize James and John didn't recognize because of their worldly influences, what's to say that you and I are any different? Kieran actually pointed out a number of weeks ago when he was talking to the disciples and talking about the Christians that these were good Christians with good intentions. But they held on to worldly influences, which meant that they remained blind in certain areas. And as Christians, we can remain blind in areas. In fact, I was going to change that this morning from we can to remain blind in certain areas into we are blind in certain areas. You make up which one I should have gone for there. Continuing to be influenced by what is around us all the time. We can't help it. It's all there. Money's the big one, isn't it? Are we unable to worship God with what is given us? Because we're so influenced about the things that we should and desire to have all around the world. We're like James and John. There's things I want to sort out for myself. I want to make sure I've got my position right. I want to make sure I've got my house and my cars and things and my pension and whatever it may be. I want to sort all of these things out first because they're priority. And then I'll work out what I can and serve God with afterwards. Are we blinded towards promotion? Are we blinded towards our own pride and lack of humility? Are we blinded about our own anger and bitterness and frustration towards things because we justify it in our own heart? I've written down here, are we blinded by spiritual immaturity? We don't realize the fact that we're drifting in and we're drifting out week in, week out, year after year with no spiritual growth whatsoever. And we think we're just doing fine and dandy. And we're as blind as the question that James and John asked. I'm the same this week as I was last week, as the last year and the last year, and I'm no further on. We've already listened to Elisha, how they asked. He asked for a double portion of the Spirit. That's what he desired. What request, what answer would you give with the request that Jesus is asking you this morning? Just fine, just drift in and drift out. And you could go on to have a sermon here about lukewarm Christians, about how God would rather spit you out. Are we remain do we remain blind? And we don't even see the areas that we're unwilling to serve in. Because Bartimaeus knew he was blind. That's as obvious as that sounds. And he knew what to ask for. And he also knew who to ask for. They tried to shut him up. He knew that Jesus could rescue him. But see, the way of the world, blind beggar, side, shut up. We don't want to get away. Only important people can go alongside Jesus. And he shouted even louder. And Jesus stopped, healed him. He knew that he needed to be brought into the light. One of the best parables for explaining how these things work to me, and it's in Mark, we've gone through it, is about the paralytic man. So there was this, Jesus was in a house, and again, the way of the world, all the important people were in the house, all the important people at the front, no one could get in. If you were someone of high standing in that society, you were in the house and you were sitting there and you listened to Jesus. And this man who was paralyzed on the stretcher could not get into the house. And then his friends, of course, brought him on the stretcher. And so they brought him up into the roof and they created an opening and they lowered him down in front of Jesus. And Jesus knew what he needed. And Jesus said to him, "Your sins are forgiven." A paralyzed man, and Jesus gave him what he needed. That man, in his paralyzed state, went from blindness to seeing, went from darkness to light while he remained on the mat. I mean, Jesus only went on to actually tell the man to pick up his mat and to walk in order just to prove to numpties like you and I, so we've got a documented account of he can actually do this in front of everyone. Everyone's going, "Who is he to say your sins are forgiven? I'll show you that I'm the Son of God. Pick up your mat and go." And they were astonished. And it's documented for us in order that we know who Jesus is. The blind man knew exactly what he needed. He knew exactly who to call out, and no one was going to make him quiet. And I don't think we even know what we need. I don't think I even know where my blind areas are. This blind man cried out to Jesus. When was the last time you and I cried out to Jesus? I'm full of my own importance. My week's too busy. I don't deserve anything bad or anything. I'm doing good enough. I'm drifting in and out. I'm just fine. Is that the way you want to live your life? In darkness and blindness? Or are we going to cry out to him? I want to move into spiritual lightness. Are you remaining here this morning with spiritual blindness in your lives? Because Jesus has documented this in the Bible for you and I, and he asks this: what do you want me to do for you? Are you able to drink from the cup that Jesus drank from? This man has received a sight from Jesus, and do you know what it says then? He receives his sight and followed Jesus. And that's, of course, a whole different sermon there. But I think he would have done what Roberta did today. Would have received, come into other Christians and disciples with they had everything in common with. But ultimately, from this passage, he would have lived a life of marked with humility and service for the sake of the gospel that had saved him. Let me just close with this. In verses 43 to 45, I'm going to read this. This is what Jesus said to them. "Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many." Do you know what we're going to sing now? Amazing Grace. I nearly close every message. Have you noticed? I always Amazing Grace fits into every sermon I ever do. Have you noticed that? I mean, the words. So if Kerry and Lydia wants to come up, and of course those great words. "I was blind, but now I see." I pray that you can sing those words this morning. And you know what it costs, but you are glad to serve Jesus who saved you. I am blind, but now I see. And let's sing it with praise, with thanksgiving, with glory and honor to the one who brought us into the light.